Welcome back to our study of Numbers. We just finished reading chapter 2, and we were talking about those that the Lord had put in leadership.
You know, when I teach on this, people normally take offense to it and think I'm dictatorial and all this kind of stuff, and that just goes to show they don't know who I am. But here's the thing. Responsibility should be commensurate to authority. And so if you give a person authority, then let them handle that. Don't make me responsible for something I don't have authority over. That would be very frustrating. And you see this in public education. You have teachers in classroom that have a responsibility for maintaining order in a classroom, but yet they don't have the authority to keep the order. Mm-hmm. And this chaos is the way it is. Well, it's the same way in anything, in business, in church, in the country, or whatever. If you put a person, if you make a person responsible for something, then give them the authority. Now, this is where in the business world, especially, and also this is a good thing for a church too, is to have a job description, especially where you have staff, okay, to where the person knows what their responsibility is and what their authority is, where the authority starts, where the authority stops. And if you have these things and implement them, then it eliminates confusion to where this person is trying to overstep his boundaries. I had a situation before I went into ministry working with a company, and there was a misunderstanding. I was over one division, another person was over another. And I don't know, through bad communication, or him bad information actually, he came down and tried to overstep his boundaries in my area, and I called him on it. And so the best thing he can do is get up there and take care of his, and you leave mine to me. And anyway, it ended up having the corporate executives down to in a meeting, and it was a communication breakdown. And you know, the guy and I were good friends, and friends today as far as that matter. But at the time, it got very tense. Know where your authority starts and stops. And when your authority stops, then don't try to tell somebody else how to run their deal. You follow me? And so you look at Moses, what happened. He had the authority as the leader of the nation. But that authority gets challenged. And it's amazing, authority gets challenged. In these days, there's so little respect for authority. And, you know, the media will wear this thing out on authority, okay? But if you have the authority of something, the responsibility of that, then God expects you to do what He authorized you to do. And as unpleasant as it may be, you have to realize who you're accountable to. Responsibility is accountable. It's accountable to the one who gave them the authority and made them responsible. It's not accountable to everybody else. It's accountable to Him. Okay? And so you realize that with the responsibility comes accountability. So I must do what the Lord's called me to do. Whether the people hate me or not is irrelevant. Does God approve? The people may like you and God disapprove. You're in trouble. Mm-hmm. Because there is a day of accountability. Or the people may hate you and God approve, and then you'll be glad you did on the day of accountability. You understand that you followed His lead. And so I feel like it's important to get this out. I mean, You have that leader of that tribe. You have the leader of the nation. Anything with more than one head's a freak. Belongs in a sideshow or something. You understand? You think about your physical body. How many heads do you have? That ought to tell you something. Nature will teach you things if you'll listen to nature. And if you look around you in the natural, there's nothing that runs with efficiency that has more than one head. God knows that. And if you look at 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, you see a divine order. God, that is as high as it goes. Then Jesus. Then the man. Then the wife. Then the children. You understand? And when you violate God's chain of command, it creates problems. Well, the same way in a local setting. Of a church. God sets an overseer over that church. Then God's going to deal with that overseer. You get a good illustration of this in the second, third chapters of Revelation, where the seven churches of Asia. God writes to the oversight, the messenger of the church, not an angel. A physical man is not writing a physical letter to a spiritual being. It's a poor translation. The same Greek word for angel, the words angel and messenger are translated from the same Greek word. And so that should be the messenger of the church at Ephesus, not the angel of the church, okay? And who is the messenger of the church? It's the one that God set there to give his message to the church. And so who is that accountable to? If you look at the end of the first chapter of the Revelation, you'll find that when he sees the candlesticks, and John sees the candlesticks, and he sees the stars, and then he gets the explanation of what those are. The candlesticks that Jesus is walking through, he said, is the seven churches. The stars that he holds in his right hand are the messengers to those churches. And so he has those in his right hand. Who are they accountable to? They're accountable to God. You follow me? And so the same way with any local oversight is accountable to God. Did God put you there or did the people? If the people did it, you're accountable to the people. But if God put you there, then you do what God said to do. And the problem is there's too many people in positions that appear to be authoritative, but they're not allowed to do their job. And so you have congregation rule, which is mob rule, or you have a board rule, which is still small mob rule, or you have the person that hears from God and conveys the message of God. That's how God sets this thing up. And we see this example here with the nation of Israel. Divine order. Now, in a church setting, one man can't accomplish the vision. Moses could not accomplish the vision. You understand? He had to have help. You look at these leaders of tribes, all right? It says that so-and-so is over an army of 100+ thousand people. Do you think one man can supervise 100,000 people? Absolutely not. People talk about they're the pastors, you know, they pastor 10,000 people. No, you don't. It's an impossibility. What do? You look after the pastors, which you may have 100. That are overseeing others. And see, this is where chain of command is so important. No man's an island. No man can accomplish his vision without help. And so God gives us an assignment, and it's important for us to be surrounded with people who share the same vision to assist us in fulfilling that assignment. The problem is you get 10 people with 10 different visions, and now you have a tug of war. Mm-hmm. And it's not unified. But when you have the one oversight with the vision that God gives, not his vision, God's vision for that ministry. When God spoke to me about this outreach center, God specifically stated things, and I wrote it down as he gave it to me, concerning the vision and the purpose of this center, the same way with this training center. God specifically said it. I didn't think about it. I wasn't planning on having an outreach center or a training center. That wasn't on my agenda. You understand? And so God said what he wanted, and he gave specifics on how this vision was to be carried out. Now, for me to do anything differently than what he said would be a violation or disobedience to God. You with me? When God says, I want this done, then that's what you do. And it's not up for popular vote. And it's not a fact of whether people like it or they don't like it. It's a fact, are you going to obey God or disobey God? And we have to look at that on an individual basis. If God sets somebody over me and they have a vision and they say the Lord says this, and I mean accurately, then whether I like it or not, I have to go along with that. Am I smarter than God? No, God's smarter than me. God knows something I don't. He sees the end from the beginning. He sees the whole picture. We just see through tunnel vision. We just see right now. You understand? Oversight has sight over the overall project. A supervisor has authority over a segment of a project. You with me? I think about when all these plants were running here in this city. They were called plant superintendent of A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever. You know. But each plant had its own superintendent. They were accountable to someone higher than them. And then these superintendents had supervisors under them over a segment of the employees. That's how things run smoothly. But I don't know, when people walk through the church doors, they think everybody just equal and you don't need an authority and everybody does their own thing. And that's why the churches are in such disarray. That's why you have so many splits in churches. It's because no one wants to come under the authority of the head of the church, the Lord Jesus Christ, and do things his way. You understand? Why is that? Because they're walking in the flesh, not in the spirit. When it gets to be, I got to have my way, you got a problem. You understand? You're just in the flesh, and you might as well admit it. What does God want? You see, Moses never got into that area. He was always wanting what God wanted, and when he was accused of being in the flesh, he'd take it before God. And then let God settle this thing out. Remember the Aaron's rod that budded? You know what that was doing? It was signifying who had the authority as that high priest. You remember when Korah rebelled against Moses? It didn't work out well for him, did it? Moses let God handle it. And we have to learn to let God handle things. But when God gives you responsibility, then take the responsibility. Does all that make sense to you? And so when we're looking at the encampment and the order of march and these type things, everybody had to follow God's protocol, not Moses. It was God's protocol that he gave to Moses, and Moses gave to the people. Now, the interesting thing about it is that at the very beginning, when God spoke to the entire nation, they said, we don't want to hear God talk anymore. You go find out what God says, and you come back and tell us what God says. And that's what Moses was doing. He was hearing God, telling them what God said, and they didn't like what Moses said. And so then they accuse Moses of doing that, not understanding that they're rebelling against God. And so, I don't know, I just felt like we need to share those things because there's such a gross violation in local churches because they don't understand how God operates. And to me, this book of Numbers is valuable in understanding how to operate a local church with order, with job description. You know, if you're the treasurer, guess what your job is? Your authority starts and stops with treasurer. That's it. You understand? If you're the music leader, your authority starts and stops with music. You don't run the church. Am I meddling now? Okay. No, the bottom line is if we do it God's way, things will stay. And I want you to see that because the book of Numbers really points this thing out. And we're going to get into job descriptions here a little later on. It is spelled out what this one's assignment is, what this one's assignment is. This one's assignment. And then God said to Moses, don't cut off a tribe from Israel because of a violation. If that tribe violates, then they'll be cut off. Follow God's plan, God's purpose. Do it God's way.
That's good. Chapter 3. Before we go on, though, about the job descriptions real quick, there's comfort in knowing what you're supposed to do, isn't there? Not having to guess and wonder what you're supposed to do. And if we're sensitive to the Spirit on the inside of us, we're always going to know, aren't we? All right, chapter 3 lists the descendants of Levi, the number...
Let me say this before you start in there. A person that likes confrontation doesn't need to be in a leadership position. But a person in a leadership position can't avoid confrontation, because that leadership will be challenged. It's not it may be, it will be.
Yeah.
And then you have to stand in a godly manner and be responsible to God for how you respond to whatever, okay? So it's not that things don't have to be confronted. Moses confronted things, but he was the meekest man on earth.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do it arrogantly and in an overbearing way. He did what he did to maintain order. Okay?
Very good. Chapter 3. We're going to learn about the descendants of Levi, the number of males in the family of Levi, job descriptions, and redemption of the firstborn of Israel. Verse 1. I already did. Last session. Thank you, Dave. We have one coming up. These are the generations of Aaron and Moses in the day that the Lord spoke with Moses in Mount Sinai.
Now remember, the tribe of Levi wasn't counted with the armies. If God told him not to, this tribe is kept separate. And so the lineage of Levi is recorded under the name of Aaron and Levi's three sons. Now, it's important to understand that under the name of Aaron, Aaron was a Kohathite, but God separated him from the Kohathites to be the high priest. And his sons to be priests. And so even though they're Kohathite by descendancy, yet God has them assigned to a different task than the rest of the tribe or the rest of the family of the Kohathites. Okay?
That's good, because that's a perfect segue for this test question. The Levite priests were descendants of Kohath and came from the family of Aaron. The Levite priests were the...
And often you'll see, just like we saw earlier, a statement can be a general statement.
Yeah.
You sons of Levi. Well, who's he talking about? Levi had three sons. And so sometimes he just speaks generally. And for a good example of this is in Malachi, I'm God and I change not. Why? Because he said, if I did, you sons of Levi, I'd be consumed. What has he done? He'd made a covenant with Levi. God's keeping it. But that's the whole tribe, you understand. But in that tribe, there's families. Okay, we have to recognize these things, that when we say Levi, we're talking about the forefather of the tribe, the patriarch, if you will, of that tribe is Levi. Levi's been long dead by the time they get here. You understand, they spent 430 years in Egypt. And now, here we have this, Levi's family has grown, just like the other guys, into a large tribe. Okay? And so, what we're going to look at in this chapter is we're going to look at this tribe individually, but they're segregated from all the rest to handle the things of God. Now, there's much to learn from this. To me, this symbolizes fivefold ministry. You have, you know, your executive staff and your support staff. And that's what this tribe of Levi would be about. Part of them handled holy things, Aaron's sons. The others couldn't. You follow me? Some were assigned to do this, 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 and that's what we're going to look at in this chapter.
Very good. Thank you. Verse 2. And these are the names of the sons of Aaron: Nadab, the firstborn, Abihu, and Eleazar, and Ithamar. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the priests which were anointed, whom he consecrated to minister in the priest's office.
So Aaron had four sons, mm-hmm. Nadab and Abihu and Eleazar and Ithamar. Nadab was the oldest son, all right? These men were set apart by God to minister as his priest. Well, this started out through dedication at the very beginning. All four of these boys were going to be priests. Aaron, high priest. Okay? That means Aaron was the only one who could go into the Holy of Holies. Even though these guys were priests, they couldn't go behind the veil. But they were responsible for offering the sacrifices that the people brought to God. Okay? So they're acting as the go-between between the people and God. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
But they had a divine protocol they had to follow. And we're going to find that two of them didn't last long because they violated God's protocol. They decided they would do something on their own. And when you start doing things, flesh stimulates, you're in violation of God. Okay?
Yes. And Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered strange fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. And Eleazar and Ithamar ministered in the priest's office, in the sight of Aaron, their father.
So he lost half of the priesthood there, didn't he? Yeah. They decided they would offer their sins, offer incense, and God had not called for it. And the bottom line is, they were executed by God. And so that leaves Eleazar and Ithamar as the leaders of the priests, so to speak, okay, with their assignments. And we'll see that they didn't have the same assignment. In the breaking camp and setting up camp, they have different assignments. These men are supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
They had, for instance, Eleazar had the oversight of the holy things.
Mm-hmm.
Ithamar had the oversight of the structure and the hangings and all that made up the tabernacle. One didn't step over into the other's jurisdiction, okay? Each one did his job.
Yeah. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, bring the tribe of Levi near, and present them before Aaron the priest, that they may minister unto him. And they shall keep his charge, and the charge of the whole congregation before the tabernacle of the congregation, to do the service of the tabernacle. And they shall keep all the instruments of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the charge of the children of Israel, to do the service of the tabernacle. And thou shalt give the Levites unto Aaron and to his sons. They are wholly given unto him out of the children of Israel.
Now, just pay attention to this. God tells Moses, here again, this is by the orchestration of God. This is not a man's idea. God says, all right, I want you to gather all the men of the tribe of Levi. Now, when they gather, I want you to give them to Aaron and his sons as assistants. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I'm paraphrasing it. So they were to, the Levites, these men, were to attend to the needs of Aaron and the entire congregation of Israel and things that pertain to the tabernacle. No one else could do that, only the tribe of Levi. And so they were set apart for tabernacle service. All of these men worked under the auspices of Aaron and his sons. Okay? So, you have to understand the magnitude of the ministry that was going on in the tabernacle to appreciate this. You think about an entire nation bringing sacrifices daily.
Mm.
There's daily sacrifice in the morning and in the evening. There was things that had to be done. The sacrifices, they cooked these with wood. Somebody has to cut the wood. Somebody has to split the wood. Somebody, they had to be washed. Somebody has to carry the water and all these things. This is where the Nephilims come in, okay? As well as these Levites. The Levites could, kill the animal, flay the animal. They could not approach the altar. They were to assist Aaron and his sons, but they could not approach the altar of God. That was exclusively for the priest. You with me? But the priest, there is absolutely no way the priest could take care of these sacrifices without him.
Yeah.
I mean, think about Solomon offering 120,000 sheep at one time. Do your math on that. I mean, that's going to keep somebody busy killing, filleting, and washing and all this other stuff before they cook. And so the Levites were assistants to Aaron and his sons. They were vital. You understand? They're a vital part of that. They need them. But each man must know his place and not overstep his boundary. Okay?
In ten? And thou shalt appoint Aaron and his sons, and they shall wait on their priest office. And the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death.
Now, if you think God's not serious about this, He'll sign Aaron and his sons as ordained ministers to Him. They're ministering to God. They're God's priest, Aaron being the high priest. He said, anyone outside of the family of Aaron that presumed to do the duties of the priest was to be killed. Capital punishment. You think God's serious about His divine order? Of course He is. And God is just as serious today, although He's not calling for us to execute people per se. He's calling for us to do things God's way and showing us the seriousness of violating that order of God. Now you think about how many people try to tell the, as we call them, people today call them pastors, how many people try to tell the pastor what to do? And try to step in. That's a dangerous thing. I mean, that is dangerous. Because there's a day of accountability. You understand? No, you better be satisfied with the position God puts you in. That's the best place for you. Whatever that is. You can't get in a better place than where God sets you. I don't care how menial it may seem to some people, that is the best place you can be. Bloom where you planted.
That's good. Verse 11, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, and I, behold, I have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel, instead of all the firstborn that openeth the matric among the children of Israel. Therefore the Levites shall be mine, because all the firstborn are mine. For on the day that I smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I hallowed unto me all the firstborn in Israel, both man and beast, mine shall they be. I am the Lord.
So God said, the firstborn is mine. Now, He says, all right, I will take this tribe of Levi as a substitute for the firstborn, and the tribe of Levi is mine. They will answer directly to me. They will be the ones that are ministering for me as far as the things concerning the tabernacle. I'll take that tribe.
And the Lord spoke unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, saying, number the children of Levi, after the house of their fathers, by their families. Every male from a month old and upward shalt thou number them.
Okay, so the Lord tells Moses to number the Levites. Take a census, and they were to be numbered by family. Now here it's every male a month old and above was to be numbered. And so Moses did what God told him to do. And I want you to see that. God said, Moses did. God said, Moses did. God said, Moses did. Moses is not coming up with this stuff. He's hearing. He's obeying. That's what ministers should do today. Hear and obey. Quit coming up with your own stuff. Let's do it God's way.
Verse 17, and these were the sons of Levi by their names, Gershon and Kohath and Merari.
So, here's the sons, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. That's the three sons of Levi. These are three families. These three families have specific assignments. Okay?
And we want y'all to remember that. That's going to be a test question. The families of Kohath, Gershon, and Merari made up the tribe of Levi. Levi's your key word there. Verse 18. And these are the names of the son of Gershon by their families, Libni and Shimei.
Okay, that's self-explanatory.
And the sons of Kohath by their families, Amram and Izhar, Hebron, and Uzziel.
Okay, now you know who Kohath's sons are, right? Mm-hmm.
And the sons of Merari, by their families, Mahali and Mushi, these are the families of the Levites according to the house of their fathers.
Let me go back to that, the four sons. Amram was the father of Moses and Aaron.
Yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to know that, okay?
Of Gershon was the family of the Libnites and the family of the Shemites. These are the families of the Gershonites.
So, the census that they took of the tribe of Levi categorized every male under one of these sons or eight grandsons of Levi. And through these men, the families of Levi were named.
That's good. And I got ahead of you. I read verse 21.
So, Gershom, did I get ahead of you?
No, sir.
Okay. Gershom, the family of the Libnites, the Shemites, these are the families of the Gershonites. And Gershon had 7,500 in male descendants from a month old and above.
The families of the Gershonites shall pitch behind the tabernacle westward.
And I want you to look at this. This is going to be the last one. We have to close it. The family of the Gershonites was to camp behind the tabernacle, which was on the west side. The front of the tabernacle, obviously, is the east side, okay? So they have an assigned place to be. West side of the tabernacle, in between the tribes on the west side and the tabernacle.
Yeah.
There's a perimeter set by God, okay? His representatives are in between. We're going to have to stop here. We'll come back to this in our next session, okay?
Okay.
Lord, I thank you that you bless us indeed, you enlarge our territory. Your hands with us to keep us from evil so that we do not cause pain. You bless us and keep us. You make your face to shine upon us. You're gracious unto us. You lift up your countenance upon us and you give us peace. So, Lord, we invite you to rise up, let your enemies be scattered, and those who hate you be before you. Amen.
Thank you.